Going Linux, episode 456, listener feedback.
No viruses, no fuss, just simple and clean. Going Linux, it's the ultimate dream. Forget the crashes and the constant lag with open source.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want to send us feedback, you can use our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com. Or you can call on a telephone using the voicemail line 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, listener feedback.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Larry. I got one word for you.
Yeah.
Nobera Linux, or actually that's two words.
Well, if you just stuck with Nobera, that would be one word. Yeah, so tell me about it. It sounds like you've got a new Linux distribution that you've been playing around with. Surprise, surprise, Linux distribution hopper that you are.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be, but as you know, that a while back I said if I can't get a game to play on Linux, then I wasn't going to play it.
Yeah, I can respect that opinion. I have the same feeling about not just games, but anything, any application. If it doesn't run on Linux, I don't need to use it.
Yes, and that's kind of, but I'm not being judgy if someone wants to use something, you know, if they want to have a dual boot or that's fine. Me, personally, sure. No. So I've always had trouble with a lot of games, not especially some of the newer ones. And, you know, I'd get them working, they'd break. You know, it was kind of a puzzle, and you know, I'm not a programmer, and so you know, I'd have to sit there and read. So I spent a lot of time trying to get games to run, and I, for most of it, with enough time and patience and reading, you would be able to get it to work. But then an update would come in and break, and you'd go and you just want to bang your head against the wall. So mm-hmm. I was listening to another Linux podcast, shout out to Destination Linux, and I heard them talking with the Nobera Linux developer.
Yeah, and Glorious Eggroll. Yeah. I heard that episode.
Yeah, Glorious Eggroll.
Fascinating.
Yeah, he's really fun to listen to. And he was telling why he made it for his father, et cetera, et cetera, so his father could play games. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I was intrigued, and I had just, or I had, an update had just broken a game on the Manjaro install. And I was just like, I just got so tired. I said, you know what? I am tired of dealing with this, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to try something different. I just didn't feel like keep fixing and fixing and fixing. I just wanted it to work, okay? Because it took a while to get it to run.
Yeah.
And, you know, the NVIDIA drivers are a pain in the butt sometimes. So I downloaded it, installed Nobera, and started installing games. It worked out of the box. Everything worked. The install was flawless.
Fantastic.
Games were running faster than I'd ever seen them run. I had one little hiccup with one game, and all I had to do there is apply a Steam fix package that it was included, and it fixed it. So it was like, hit this button, install the fix up, there, it should work. And it did. But the Proton he develops, the Proton GE, has this stuff that Valve can't put in there because they're a company. But, you know, he's an end user, so this is for end users. But he made a lot of great decisions, and I'm running old games, new games. I was running Starfield at like 80 frames a second. Now it's just buttery smooth with everything maxed out. And I'm like, thank you. So I've had a few updates and nothing's broken. It's also great for content creators. He's got things for DaVinci Resolve, OBS, but was really cool. Steam was already pre-installed, and you just had to update it.
As one would expect.
Yes. So it's using Plasma 6. It uses X Wayland for the video. Because I guess there's still a little full Wayland's a little weird in games sometimes, but X Wayland is kind of like the bridge, and it just works. It's been rock solid. It has everything I could want in a operating system. It's easy to maintain. It just works, and it's absolutely beautiful. I threw a picture of what a default desktop looks like.
Yeah, I see it.
And this is the first distribution. I didn't want to change anything. I haven't changed anything. Wow. It still does that same background. And he's got several different versions of that background, but that's the actual background that installed because I liked it so much. I haven't done anything else.
Nice.
So it's based on Fedora.
Okay.
And it uses...
So we're using RPM packages.
Yes.
And what else? Flatpaks, maybe?
Flatpaks and also it uses Butter, FS.
Oh, okay. As a file system?
As a file system. Okay. And most people wouldn't notice this, but I did, is that I let the wizard set the partitions up, everything, okay? Just didn't touch it. And I noticed that, it used to be you'd have the same amount of swap as you did memory installed on the system.
Okay.
So it is actually set that way. So right now I have 16 in this. So it was, the swap drive is also set 16, which makes sense if you're going to, you're going to be using a lot of resources for games or OBS or something. It's good to have a little bit larger swap file.
Mm-hmm.
And what was also nice, I always used to have to go, is I have the operating system is on a SSD, but my big storage drive is spinning Rust. But it automatically mounted it, and I didn't have to go in and make it bootable on startup, or have to go every time I did it to, just remount it. It just mounted it automatically, which was nice.
Oh, that's convenient. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of convenience. And I liked it so much. But I joined his Patreon. I am now a patron of that. I actually gave him some money. It was so good because I want to
support. That's great.
If a developer is doing something that's helping me out, then we want to make sure that he's supported. And one of the things is, yes, he is a Red Hat engineer, okay, but he also, he has he spends a lot of time developing it, and he buys games so he can make them work on Nubera. So it's not really fair for him to have to pay for everything out of his pocket and develop it. So I'm more than happy to give him $5 a month. There's different tiers, but I said, here, take my money. Here's a coffee every month. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not even a Starbucks latte. So, apparently he has like 456 people that are help supporting him and that's enabling this product. But, he's not making bank. But if you looked at how much time he spends on it with his team, he has a small team, I'm sure, and donating to him just might help keep the lights on. So we need to make sure we support our developers. If you find a distro or an application or something that maybe your company relies on that's not glamorous, then maybe you should look at maybe supporting that developer and that software package for the development. Yes, you can take this stuff for free, but let's go ahead and support our developers. Now, there's been so many talks about this. We need to find a way to support our developers so we can still have all these really great things that makes our lives easier.
Yeah, absolutely. This distribution specifically designed for running games
designed
like a
for just me. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Glorious.
He did it just for you.
He did. And his father.
Yeah, there you go.
But no,
that's great.
It's really good. So anybody that's a gamer or just as a content creator, I can highly recommend Nobera without any qualms. So if you're struggling to get your games working, or that's the only thing that's keeping you from telling Microsoft to go punch sand, look at Nobera.
Yeah, it sounds like this would be good for anyone who is a gamer who wants to game on Linux, but also wants to use Linux to get other things done. So you can still install just about anything you can install on any other Linux distribution, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. It's got the same repositories, but wait a minute. You said other stuff besides gaming? What are we talking
about
here?
Yeah, sorry. There are those of us who gaming with our computers.
Gaming is life. Come on. No, seriously. It's really a good operating system. Like I said, it's got everything you'd expect. It's just if you want to run games or content like OBS, if you want to play games and stream it on OBS, this would probably be the one for you, because all kinds of good stuff. Anyway, enough of me gushing. So what have you done? Anything as exciting as me?
I don't know whether it's as exciting as you. I bought some new computer hardware. And
do tell.
Yeah, it's one that is so new, it falls into that category of not completely supported by Linux yet. I knew that going into it. I bought it because it was thin and light and long battery life, which this one has in spades. And I got it from Costco when they had it available. But typical Costco, big box store here in the United States, and I know in some other countries for sure, they typically, when it comes to computer hardware and electronics and things like that, they will go to the manufacturer and say, we want a special version just for Costco, and it's got to have these upgrades that you would normally charge for. And we'll charge for them as well, but we're still going to give our members a discount. And so, long story short, it's an HP Dragonfly 13.5 G4. So the latest Dragonfly, which is their thin, lightweight, long battery life computer, give you an idea of how lightweight it is. It's 2.2 pounds. I haven't found another computer that is that light. And I'll be parting ways with my XPS 13, which has been, around for a number of years. And it is, it's perfect. There's not a scratch on it. But it was time to upgrade because it's got a 7th gen Intel processor on it. This one has a 13th gen Intel processor. And that's part of the problem with the compatibility. The Linux kernel hasn't caught up with specifically audio drivers and webcam drivers for that.
So did you buy
but
me
I can
one
use
too?
An external webcam. this one.
Don't you think that the co-host should have one of these too?
Well, I don't know, because you're using yours for gaming, and this one is optimized for business. So I'm not sure it would make a good gaming laptop.
It's the grown-up version. I see what you did there.
Yeah, and I'm still working through the kinks, and I installed Ubuntu Cinnamon 24.04 on it, and it works perfectly, as I said, except for the audio and the video, the audio and the camera. So audio output, I'm using a headphone all the time or an external speaker. And the camera, I have an external camera that I can use, but I rarely use the camera anyway, so not a big deal. I know that there are some updates coming to the Linux kernel to support this new processor, and that I expect in a couple of months, according to what I've been reading, so that will solve itself soon. I don't know about the camera. It's a kind of a specialized camera. I see some development work on that. I haven't seen a way to fix it yet, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And as I said, I can always use the external camera if I need to.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's been performing wonderfully. It's behaving nicely. And
how much battery?
So far, I love it. Battery time is advertised as 12 hours. I think I'm actually getting 8 or 10 if I turn down the brightness and other things.
So that's under active use?
That's under active use, yep.
Goodness gracious.
Yep. So my wife has a MacBook Air, and she routinely runs it off of battery. She just closes the lid and lets it sit hibernating or sleeping or whatever it is, and she rarely has to plug it in. And this device weighs less than the MacBook Air. I can do exactly the same thing with it, and the battery lasts longer than the MacBook Air.
Well, if it was a gaming machine, it would already work with everything.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe I'll install Nobara on it, and we'll see.
I'm sorry.
There we go.
Okay.
I know, but well, I'll let you know if I install Nobara on it, and if I get any recommendations as to whether or not it can actually work as a gaming machine.
It would be kind of funny if it did work. Everything worked out of the box.
It would.
Okay, so let's
anyway. Moving along.
You know, we were supposed to be recording a show, but we're talking about playing games and
we're
new
talking
hardware.
We're talking about Linux, and we do this on every episode.
Yeah,
so if our listeners haven't figured that out yet, they haven't been listening, which is a whole other issue. Okay, well, shall we get into our feedback?
Well, I guess we should probably.
I
do
guess
that.
We have to. Yeah. Okay.
So, Sean NZ 17 Robinson, he sent us an audio file, so let's hear what he had to say, Larry.
Aloha from Utah, Larry and Bill. This is your number one pedantic minion, and I've got some more listener feedback for you all. How have you been? Are you taking care of yourselves? Healthy? Getting enough exercise? Plenty to eat? That's good. Oh, and by the way, thanks for all of the episodes of Going Linux that you guys record. Keep the good work going. Keep the good episodes going. And, anyone listening should tell their friends to listen to the podcast. How about that? Or their family. Or their enemies. Or anyone else who might like to listen. Anyway, let's get to the topics. First, Larry. Recently you were talking about how a listener was concerned about Google Analytics being used on your website, back when you were just trying to get an idea of the geographic distribution of your listeners. Well, I have good news. You don't have to use Google Analytics for something like that. You can avoid all of the proprietary this and Google tracking that by using free Libre open source software. I'm talking about AWStats, a good old software project that I've been using myself for decades. AWStats simply looks at your logs from your website to look at your access logs and your error logs to determine what's happening. So not only can it report, say for example, which are the most often requested pages or addresses that are getting 404 errors, you can also look at it to see the geographical distribution of your visitors and see, by example, with Internet Protocol IP address matching to the geographical locations typically associated with them, where, in aggregate, your listeners are visiting from, and therefore probably listening from. It's a really great piece of software that even converts things into tables, charts, and graphs so that you can visually see things and get percentages as well as absolute numbers. So, a very useful piece of software that I like quite a bit. Two, so there was this really good applet for KDE 2 or KDE 3, and it was called Ardor, spelled A-R-D-O-R or A-R-D-O-U-R, something like that. It was a really great app, and I used to use it a lot. However, it didn't get upgraded for modern computers, and so I haven't used it for lots of years. Do you guys have a good recommendation for an alternative, whether it's from you, Larry, or you, Bill, or any of the listeners or minions? Yeah, it's a pretty good little app. So if you have a recommendation or suggestion for an alternative, please let me know. Next, three. I was wondering, on a technical level, how does the Ventoy software work? Like, I understand how to use it. You run the program, it installs to a USB drive. You then load the USB drive with a bunch of ISOs, or images of various Linux distros or other software you want to boot. And then you start the computer and you get a nice menu and you can navigate it with the keyboard and select what you want to start and it will boot the ISO. Well, what I was wondering is, technically speaking, if perhaps you, Larry, could explain this to me. Bill, you get a free pass. I know you're more about the computer game, so don't worry, it's cool. How does Ventoy work on a technical level to get the ISO after the initial booting and then boot it as if the ISO had been copied with DD or somehow otherwise directly installed onto the USB drive? Does it use LILO, the Linux loader, or Grub, the Grand Unified Bootloader, or Grub 2, or a different boot manager, or exactly what sort of almost magic-like or dark magic are they using to make this happen? Well, any guidance would be appreciated on that topic. And finally, number four. I used to use a really good program for extracting CD audio and converting it to MB3 or Ogg Vorbis for Linux. I don't remember which one it was I last used in this way. It was a really streamlined way to go and take CD digital audio, also known as Redbook audio, and convert that to MP3 or Ogg Vorbis format, and then automatically download the metadata, you know, artist, album, track, CD number, year of publication, etc., and apply that to each individual file. I used to use a program for Windows that was free Libre open source software, and I think it was called CD Extract. It was hosted at SourceForge and was a really good program until the author got to be money hungry or money starved or just greedy. And so he added like all of these aggressive donations messages in the software and countdown timers and stuff like that. So even though it was still, you know, free Libre open source software, it was just so aggressive about money that I stopped using it. And there's another one, though, for those that must use Linux that I started, sorry, I said that backwards, Windows. The Windows program that's open source that I really like that I use instead when I'm using Windows, it's called FRE:AC. I don't know if they pronounce it as free AC like I pronounce it, or they just call it freak. I mean, it does spell out freak. Anyways, it's the free audio coder or free audio codec. Anyways, it's a nice GUI program that allows a streamlined ability to take audio CDs and convert them into the format of your choice, whether the free lossless audio codec FLAC or Ogg Vorbis or MP3 or a few others that they support. And that's a good one for Windows. And I suppose I could run that with Wine or Wine Tricks or Proton or whatever Wine variant. It's not exactly ideal, right? So, what do I use for Linux? Well, I used to use a program called RipperX, but I couldn't seem to get it to work with my USB CD drive when I last tried. So perhaps it only works with parallel ATA or serial ATA drives? I'm not really too sure. Although I remember back in the day when I had my first CD-ROM drive, that was a 4X CD-ROM drive, but when you were extracting audio and converting it to a lossy format like MP3, it would take you like an hour and a half per CD because it could only read the audio in real time and then convert it from that to a wave to an MP3 in the background. So by the time it got through the entire 50, 60, 70 minute or more CD, it converted like the first few tracks and then had the rest to go. It took you 90 minutes. Thank goodness it's not normally like that these days. Anyway, back to the present. For Linux, I ended up writing a bash script, but it's still something of a two-step process. The first part uses the excellent program, CD Paranoia, to go and extract all the data tracks and counteract any jitter or other CD reading problems. Then, that gets encoded to the format of my choice. For MP3, I use LAME. Also, there's one out there called LAME2, if anyone wants to convert to MP2 instead of MP3. Anyways, for Ogg Vorbis, I just use OGGENC, the Ogg encoder. So then I end up with a bunch of files, but they don't have any metadata. So then I start up the GUI program, EasyTag, EASYTAG, capital E, capital T in that name. And that's a really good piece of software that basically analyzes the tracks, creates a unique fingerprint, and then matches it to a database to figure out what the likely album is, and from there, or track, if you want to look at individual tracks. And then from there, you can say, oh, it's this one, and we'll apply the metadata. It even has a scanner feature, which you can use not just to apply the metadata or like batch running of things. You can actually rename the files to match the metadata. So a really good program that I recommend to people. However, this is not the most streamlined approach. So I would like some recommendations on how to convert my CDs to Ogg Vorbis or MP3 with Linux. Now, something I was thinking about is, I know VLC has an option of converting audio from CDs, or at least playing CDs. Would that be able to automatically apply the metadata? Or what about something like Clementine or Amarok? Amarok used to be really good, and then they decided to take their project in a weird direction. So Clementine was created as a fork of Amarok, and I really like that music media library manager. It's a really good app, except they seem to introduce a few bugs, and last time I tried it with Debian Linux, there still was some bugs that would crop up when you were like playing your entire library on shuffle, other things like that. So I stopped using it regularly. And so when I listen to music, I generally just use a bash script I wrote that uses MPlayer to go and shuffle all of my music. So MPLAYER is called with find after find finds all the MP3s, OGG, and other audio that it's supposed to look for, then plays it on shuffle, which is a nice way for me to listen to my music. I digress, though. So a lot of these apps were using CDDB, the CD database that everyone was contributing to back in the day. But then CDDB sold out to some commercial interests and they cut off support. So that got replaced by things like FreeDB and GNUDB or MusicBrainz. So a lot of these older apps that were still functioning for Windows or Linux just can't query the database anymore, so they can't apply the metadata if they were using CDDB and weren't upgraded. Some apps let you specify a database server, and so you can work around things that way as long as they're speaking the same protocol and formatting and everything. I don't know. It's just, things have changed a lot since I was converting a lot of CDs to MP3 around like 2000, 2003, whatever years they were. And so with my USB, CD, and DVD drive, I'd like some advice on how to make the conversions in a more streamlined way where I can just insert a CD into the drive, then let it copy the data, begin converting everything in the background, automatically applying the metadata, and then after it's extracted the audio from the CD, it automatically ejects it so I know to include the next CD. So whether I'm converting music CDs or audio comedy or audio drama or even like language lessons or audiobooks. I can just basically be the human part of the machine, swapping and switching CDs as we go along, and the computer takes care of the rest. Anyway, I know that was a lot of information, but that was number four, the final question for this listener feedback from me. So, from your number one pedantic minion, Sean NZ17 Robinson, I'm saying to you, aloha from Utah.
All right, Sean, hey, thanks for all the feedback, as always. And yeah, it's good to hear from you. All right, AWStats or AWStats. I am actually aware of that, and I know that my website provider installs that and makes that available as part of the package that they provide. So I've been using that for a long time. My only foray into Google statistics was to see if they could break it down anymore. And quite frankly, AWStats does a much better job, and I don't need or want to use Google tracking stuff. So there you go. But thanks for the suggestion. If I hadn't known about that, that would have been a great find. So thank you. And you described it very nicely about the fact that it gives you the text-based statistics that you can look at and analyze and download and everything else, but it also gives you some nice graphs, and it's really a good package for sure for website analysis.
Yeah. So our next, he asked about a replacement for Ardor. And
yeah,
I want anybody, you know, because you look at Ardor, it says it's a digital audio workstation. So I don't know if Audacity would cut it for him, but I know one, it's not open source, but a lot of open source people use it, and it's called Reaper. And if you're going to use it for educational and non-commercial, I think, or it's not make $20,000 using the program, then you can pay the $60 license fee for it. But you can try it out for free to see if it even works. But I've heard,
is that license fee annual, or is that monthly, or is that one time?
It looks like it's a one time up to, because right now Reaper's at like version 7.17, I think I remember seeing, and it says that it's good for updates all the way to 8.99. So it probably $60 for 3-4 years, you know, and then, you know, I guess if they went to a new version, you'd just relicense it. But if you're enjoying it, you know, what, $60 is, you know, that for non-commercial. Now, if you're using it to make lots of money, millions of dollars, you have to pay for the $225 license. But
sure,
if you're making millions of dollars, $225 is nothing. So, I've heard is a good one. It runs natively on Linux, but you might have a different idea on where you can find some stuff, Larry.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes to the alternative2.net website that allows you to type in the software that you're interested in finding an alternative to, as the name of the website would suggest. And then you can filter it based on, does it run on Linux? Is it available cross-platform? All those other good things. And the link I'll provide will be directly to the alternatives to Ardor that are Linux-based. So you can click on that link and find that very quickly.
Yes.
All right. And as far as describing how Ventoy works technically with all the nice little details and a deep dive, maybe we don't have time to go into a deep dive, but if you can give us a brief overview of that, Bill, that would be wonderful.
Sure. It's automagical. There. Done.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Magic.
Yeah,
love
magic.
It.
So basically, Ventoy is a you burn, make. use Rufus or Etcher or any of the other USBs, and it's an ISO. Apparently ISO has libraries in it, so you could just drop the ISOs onto the stick, and the Ventoy program ISO will say, oh, well, brings up a menu, you want this, and then it uses its libraries to run that ISO, making it bootable. That is the super simple, probably incorrect. I just like Automagical better, but yeah. I'm sure if you go to Ventoy, they can give you all the nitty gritty. But I know it's got a lot of library. It's got libraries, and it's basically a program to make your Linux or Windows ISOs bootable.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, and it's FOSS, I think, has a guide to using Ventoy. I know that, you know, Sean, what you're looking for is the technical details of how it works, not how you use it. But I'll include a link to that It's FOSS article from 2023 on how to use it. There are videos on YouTube and other places you can get to with tutorials. And I haven't really found anything that goes through all the details of how it actually makes it bootable, and after you run an ISO for the first time, how it makes it persistent. My thought would be that it probably has a partition that it creates for the persistence, and it just uses that. And once it recognizes that you want to use one of the ISOs, it is giving you access to the various files that it stores on that.
It's magic.
Partition. It's magical. Yeah, exactly. So, like I said, we'll include a link in the show notes to the It's FOSS article, and from there, I'm sure you can find on your own the stuff maybe that you have already found from YouTube and various other places. So, okay. All right. And finally, that CD conversion software. Again, I'm going to include a link to the Alternative to website that gives you a list of some other things that you can use. Top of the list, if you filter by Linux, is FreeAC, and that's FreAC. And that's an audio converter, CD ripper that's free and open source, runs on Linux, Mac, Windows, BSD, and there's a portable apps version of that as well if you're running Windows and want to run it. It runs in Wine as well. And so lots of different possibilities there, depending on what you want to convert to. Some of the things it lists are MP3, MP4, MP4A, FLAC, Vorbis, Opus, AAC, WAVE, WAV, and WMA, and as it says, other formats. So it's very popular, apparently, a cross-platform app, and I see that Ubuntu Cinnamon that I'm using has it available in the software library, so it's probably right there in your distribution's software repositories that you can download and install and give it a try. So there you go. And that's it. You know, half hour into our podcast, we have covered one piece of feedback. The others will likely go a little bit faster. But thanks to Sean, we had, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4 different topics in one feedback.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. Our next feedback is from Dave, and he wrote in and said, hello from Brockport, New York. Hi, Larry and Bill. Thank you for being the high point of the weeks I download your podcast. You guys do a great job and are super enjoyable to listen to. Regarding episode 454, I am so glad Bill did not get near the VLA supercomputer. He would likely load a new distro on it. That's probably right. But seriously, your podcast is a wonderful resource, Dave. Well, thanks for the kind words,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. And I resemble that comment. Thank you very much.
There you go. Okay. All right.
So our next one comes from Stefan, and he writes, "Hello, Larry and Bill. Please explain the reasons for changing the podcast music. The new music on the podcast sounds very synthetic and has nothing to do with music. Best regards, Stefan."
Yeah, and he puts quotes around the word music when he says the new music, quote, music on the podcast.
So,
yeah.
Before you say anything, let me say something first. We have had the same intro music since like episode one. I went back and listened. So we're 450, this is 456. So 456 mm-hmm. into going in, we haven't changed anything as far as the music or theme music. So it was nice. I kind of like it. But I guess we just like to keep it fresh and maybe throw a little surprise in, you know, there's a lot of tools that was out there, so it doesn't hurt to try new things. But Larry, I'm gonna turn it over to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's music that's generated by AI, so it is very synthetic.
Okay.
And the style of music that I chose was intentionally a bit synthetic. So with those two things going for it, I'm not surprised that you thought it was synthetic. And has nothing to do with music? Well, that's in the ear of the beholder, I'm sure. But we both liked it. And as you know, as it says at the end of our podcast now, we have produced it or created it with Suno AI, available at suno.com if you want to generate your own, quote, music using an AI music generator. And it gives you some flexibility if you want to pay for things, flexibility on licensing and things like that. But just the free trial version, I used until I ran out of credits and came up with this, and it sounds pretty good, I think. And it has something to do with Linux, even though it may not have anything to do with music. And that was the whole thing, something to do with Going Linux podcast and something to do with Linux as a topic. And I think it captured some of the key points of people wanting to switch to Linux in the lyrics. So we're going to stick with it until we decide to change. So there you go, Stefan. But thanks for the feedback.
Yeah.
neither one of us, I think, is a music aficionado, Bill. I hesitate to speak for you, but I kind of suspect that on your part. Certainly
true
on my part.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah. It's true for me. As a non-music aficionado, I think it takes one to know.
I listen to a lot of music, actually. I'm pretty
you do?
I'm
okay.
Pretty eclectic. But I thought when you said, hey, listen to see what you think, I liked it. And, of course, you've edited it down because the original one's about 3 minutes. So, but I thought for what it was very catchy and it was fun. And, you know, like I said, Going Linux started back in 2007?
Seven, I think, yeah.
Okay, so this is 2024 and you've had the same intro music since for all that time. So somehow I think it's okay if we if we try something new. And I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of fun. I mean, yeah, no one's going to think that we paid someone to write that. You know, we use Linux. We both like technology. So we want to try different stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
I liked it. I thought it was great. And
you
did a good job, Larry.
Well, thank you. Yeah, Suno did the good job.
Well,
I just
you
had put in the
wanted.
Prompt.
Come on now.
Yeah, I know. Well, I had, I basically said, create a jingle. I was hoping it would be short for the Going Linux podcast and describe what the podcast was about. And that's what it came up with. I thought it did a great job. And yeah,
I liked it.
So, and yeah, I had to edit it down because you can't spend the first 2-3 minutes of the podcast listening to the music every episode.
Yeah, but I, you know, when you first made it, I listened to it through it several times, just because I thought it was quite good and quite catchy. But I'm hoping that he was just curious. I'd really be interested to see what our other listeners think about it. So send it in. We'd love to hear.
Yeah, good or bad. Well, it doesn't matter. You know, it. We'll take it with.
It's my fault anyway.
In the way that it was meant. Yeah. Okay. And from this non-music aficionado, and from Bill, the music aficionado, we'll take your comments as they're meant. Okay, on to other things. Jesper sent in a follow-up email about our audio quality. We're not talking about the music here. We're talking about the comments, the verbiage, the you and I speaking.
Well, I have trouble speaking.
He writes, "Hey, Larry and Bill, thank you for your feedback about this issue. Your volume balance is better now. Thank you so much for that. Regards, Jesper." And for those of you who this is your first episode or you didn't listen to the episode where that comment was made, Jesper sent in an email letting us know that he was having problems hearing because of the differences between the volume levels of Bill's mic and my mic. And I was trying out a new audio connection, and obviously it didn't work. So I've gone back to my 10 plus year old microphone and mixer, and it works fine.
Yeah. I'm glad it's working better for you, Jasper. I would say that I work real hard on it, but that'd be a lie. That's all, Larry.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've done a great job of getting a better microphone and, you know, progressively upgrading, and that has helped the sound. And these days, I don't have to do nearly as much editing as I did when you were first using whatever the heck it was you were using.
Oh, I still remember you going, "Do you think it could be any louder?" I have to spend an hour cleaning out your background. Oh, I still remember that.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's no longer as much of a problem.
No,
I still hear some background, but I hear it on mine too. So thankfully, Audacity takes care of that.
You have a little Datsun running around getting into stuff, you're going to hear background noise.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So our next one comes from David, and he provided feedback on episode 453. "Hi, guys. My new, safer, and inclusive salutation to both of you." Oh, thanks, Dave.
Thanks for being inclusive.
Yes, we appreciate it, even though it's a running joke between us who gets for top billing.
Yes.
"Just a quick comment about AntennaPod that was mentioned by George in your latest listener feedback, and that was on episode 453. AntennaPod is an Android podcast playing app that is fully open source and developed and supported by volunteers, as it says on its website, and the website link is in the show notes. AntennaPod is a podcast player that is completely open. The app is open source, and you can subscribe to any RSS feed. AntennaPod is built by volunteers without commercial interest, so it respects your privacy while giving you full control. Its forms are active, open to anyone who registers, and you can even see me there on occasion. I am a beta tester and notify the developers of any bugs I encounter, and also provide suggestions for features. If he has not already done so, I suggest that George post his concerns there, and they will be commented upon and addressed if warranted. Bestest, David, your expat Canadian, etc., etc." Well, David, you have sent us so much stuff in, I am now promoting you to our expat Canadian minion. Congratulations. And AntennaPod has been around since 2011. Hey.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And David added that as a PS to his email. And he also wrote a PPS. Postscript. Yes. He says, "I know that AntennaPod is not a Going Linux subject matter. However, George brought it up, and I wanted to ensure it has a positive spin rather than the negative one George experienced. After all, like much of Linux, it is open source, non-commercial, and done by volunteers. In response to George's specific remarks, the Q view is the best way to use AntennaPod, with all episodes automatically posted there when received, as per your settings. Viewing within individual subscriptions is helpful, especially to look at the show notes of past episodes or re-download or stream them. You can also override the general settings for specific subscriptions. Episodes view is not at all useful. In fact, in my many years of using AntennaPod, the only times I have used it is in cases that I fall asleep while listening and missed something at the end, and missed something that ended and was deleted. I never sleep through Going Linux episode, of course. Then I can go to the episode view and find what I missed and reinstated. I have never had a situation where I missed any episodes of Going Linux or any of my 40-plus subscribed podcasts, except once or twice during beta testing, which was quickly fixed before the final beta release. Feel free to copy and paste the content of these emails, i.e. without my address, and send it to George. Hopefully there won't be a PPPS. It's just that additional thoughts of things that I should have written come to me while walking the dog. Bestest, once again, David.
Thanks, David.
Yes. Okay, well, I know that George listens regularly, so unless George requests it, I'm not going to send the text of your email, because the only thing that is in there that he might want to click on is the AntennaPod link, and he's already got AntennaPod. So unless he wants to read it, I'd be happy to forward it if he wants. There you go.
All right. So our next one, and it looks like it's our last one, comes from Steven.
Yes, sir.
And he provides a note about another Linux distribution. There's other Linux distributions, Larry? Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Once or twice I run across them.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. So he writes, "Hey guys, me again. So I was struggling with Pocket Casts and your podcast being delayed. They appeared in the app but failed to download. The issue is partly resolved. It appears to be something to do with the parsing of the new episodes by the Pocket Cast server, at least from what I've been able to find out. The podcast now download and I can listen again. So, I finally made a part switch to Linux. I have Nobera running on my Lenovo Legion and Vanilla Fedora on a MacBook Pro. I'm just delaying my main desktop as I use Microsoft Flight Simulator from the MS Store, and the possible loss of that software fills me with dread, but I am dual booting now. Another minion for the Linux team. Hey, Larry, guess what runs on Nobera? Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Really? Really? Okay.
Yes, it does.
All right, Steven, give it a try. There's your challenge. Try it and see if it runs the way you would expect. And if it does, you may be finally able to stop dual booting. So Flight Simulator is one of those that requires a license, right?
Yes.
So, so does it transfer over?
Yeah, I've got it installed on mine. I bought the Steam version, so I don't know if he has the Steam version or just a regular Flight Simulator. So it depends on if it's in Steam, whatever. It might not work flawlessly because the Steam has optimizations to help it run. But if you're having a problem with that and you really love flight simulators, I mean, I know it's paid, but so is Microsoft Flight Simulator. Look at X-Plane. X-Plane runs even better than Microsoft Flight Simulator on Nobera.
Can you use all the same hardware accessories and controls and stuff?
You should be able to. I know you can. And what's nice is there's a lot of if you go to, I believe it's xplane.org, there's people that have developed add-on aircraft that you can either buy or it's free to download. So they have just about everything you're looking for. So just in case you ever want to just give it a complete break, that might be something that will work for you. And I do have a question for him now. He says he has the Fedora, a vanilla Fedora running on the MacBook Pro. Is it the old x86 or chips or the or the new M chips? Because if it's that, I didn't know that Fedora, I know there's, they make a Sahi Linux. I wonder if that's what mm-hmm. he's running on a MacBook Pro, unless it's an older one. So I'm just kind of curious, that's all.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be interesting to know. So if you have a chance, write in, let us know. And I will include a link to the X-Plane website in the show notes. And it is actually x-plane, plane.com mm-hmm. is where it is.
And yeah, you can, you'll say the store, but if you sign up the store, you'll see that a lot of what's in there. Now, there are some ones you can pay for, but there's a lot of free planes, like, you know, especially like the Boeings and some Airbuses and stuff. He knows what I'm talking about. I didn't know this was Going Linux gaming show, but yes, see what you think. But I also want to know how you like Nobera. I'm in love with it, so let me know.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always interested in feedback from our listeners about things that they've tried that we haven't or that we have, especially if they have a little different experience than what we have. So thank you for your suggestion on Nobera. And I think between the Destination Linux episode and your suggestion, I think we'll maybe get some people to try out Nobera just to see how it works.
It works.
Especially if they're gamers, for sure.
If you're a gamer in Nobera or a content creator, I want to make that clear. A gamer or a content creator, Nobera, I think, is a perfect distribution. But, you know, what might be perfect for me might not be perfect for you, but everything he's done has been fantastic. And if I can break something, I will. There is nothing I could break on this one. It's just everything works great. So great job. I mean, I liked it. Like I said, I liked it so much, I'm supporting the project now. So, yeah.
And that says a lot. Yep.
So,
okay,
Larry.
That is the end of our gaming episode. I mean, our listener feedback episode.
That's funny.
And our next episode will be Networking and Introduction.
We actually know what we're doing.
Yes, we do.
Wow.
Surprise.
Okay.
Yeah, we're starting to plan these out ahead of time and record them ahead of time. So if you could listen to this sometime in June, we will have recorded it maybe at the end of May. So if there's any phenomenal upgrades to Linux networking that happened during the month of June, we'll have missed them, but I suspect not. And it'll be an introduction anyway. We'll ease into this with some definitions of terms.
All right.
So there we go. And thank you for once again for writing that, Bill. Anyway, until that episode comes out, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe. We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
And our theme music is made with Suno at suno.com.